Chapter 13. Asa Gilbert Eddy. Asa Gilbert Eddy, the impersonation of integrity in the science of man. Mary Baker Eddy. 1876.
Asa and Betsy Smith Eddy reared their 7 children on their farmstead in Londonderry, Vermont, where Asa farmed in the summers and worked as a cooper during the winters. But the Eddies were far from a typical New England farm family. Eddy, as a common noun, is strictly an English word. Noah Webster, that jewel among philologists, recorded, "I find this word in no other language." His definition is, "a current of water running back, or in a direction contrary to the main stream, in a circular direction." And the verb eddy means to move circularly. Metaphysically, a circle represents infinity, without beginning or end. Water symbolizes mental activity, a current of water, a channel of thought. Thus, eddy stands for mental activity, contrary to the mainstream, tending to move toward infinity. And Betsy Smith Eddy fulfilled the name her husband had given her. Their next to youngest son, Asa Gilbert, was the closest to his parents and responded most to the progressive ideas of his unusually capable mother. Betsy's children learned to do all things methodically and well, with no lines drawn between men's work and women's work. Gilbert farmed with his father, taught writing in the winters, and became interested in a marvelous new invention, which was lessening labor and drudgery, the sewing machine, taking the agency and traveling throughout Massachusetts. Gilbert was a fluent writer, whose diction and penmanship both were beautiful. He also had a natural artistic ability with a pencil, which delighted the children of his acquaintance. He was the favorite friend of 70-year-old Mary Godfrey, and also the best friend of her parents, Mr. and Mrs. George Llewellyn Godfrey of Chelsea. For the past several years, Gilbert Eddy had been a frequent visitor in their home, and in recent years, his health had become a deep concern to Mrs. Godfrey. Her severe heart trouble was threatening to make him a hopeless invalid. At this time in Lynn, there was great rejoicing at No. 8 Broad Street, for Mrs. Glover had brought forth her child and presented him to the world. There was additional rejoicing in that house, albeit less spiritual, for another child had arrived at that address in October of 1875. A daughter had been born to the young couple who rented the second floor, Mr. and Mrs. William Nash. Although the Nashes were not remotely interested in Christian Science, they were exceedingly fond of their landlady, and named their newborn infant Flora Glover. Early in the new year, Mary Glover received a most gratifying response to one of the many complimentary copies of Science and Health that had been sent out. Amos Bronson Alcott has been little acknowledged by the world, though his literary peers in New England recognized his spiritual genius. Henry David Thoreau said that Alcott was the sanest man he ever knew, and Ralph Waldo Emerson once wrote of him, quote, "Wonderful is his vision, the steadiness and scope of his eye, at once rebuke all before it, and we little men creep about ashamed," end quote. In time to come, the name of A. Bronson Alcott will be remembered beyond his contemporaries because of his response to and appreciation of Science and Health and its author. On the 17th of January, he wrote Mrs. Glover, "Accept my thanks for your remarkable volume entitled Science and Health, which I have read with profound interest. And let me add, the perusal has awakened an earnest desire to know more of yourself personally. The sacred truths which you announce, sustained by facts of the immortal life, give to your work the seal of inspiration, reaffirm in modern phrase the Christian revelations. In times like ours, so sunk in sensualism, I hail with joy any voice speaking an assured word for God and immortality. And my joy is heightened the more when I find the blessed words are of woman's divinings. May I then inquire if you would deem a visit from me an impertinence? If not, and agreeable to you, will you name the day when I may expect the pleasure of fuller interchange of view on these absorbing themes?" 3 days later, following the proposed visit, Alcott wrote in his journal, "Mrs. Glover receives me cordially at her house, and I have an interesting visit. I find her one of the fair saints whose attractions have drawn about her a little circle of followers, which meets for fellowship at her house fortnightly. I find her a devoted student of the New Testament, a Christian in the truest sense, an idealist in apprehending the supremacy of mind over matter, and a faith in spirit transcending any contemporary whom I have been fortunate to meet. I shall cultivate further acquaintance with a person of such attractions, mentally and spiritually." Their meeting gave Mrs. Glover hope. An exceptionally well-educated man was spiritual enough to understand and endorse Science and Health, and eager to present it to the acknowledged literary leaders of New England. But when Alcott introduced her volume and her science to his literary circle, the response was less than enthusiastic. At a later date, Mary healed the elderly gentleman of a severe form of rheumatism, which had confined him to his chair. Alcott once said, quote, "If I were younger, I would help that woman," end quote. But a revolutionary science that required action and demonstration also required youth, ardor, and stamina. It was too demanding for the aged philosopher. So though his kindliness never waned, his interest did. Mary's disappointed hope was forced to turn once again to God and not man. But the help for which she yearned came from another and unexpected direction. When the new year was still young and baby Flora Glover was about 4 months old, a crisis occurred for the new father. His wife and baby were both ill. Young Mr. Nash sent a distressed call for help to his favorite aunt, who lived in Chelsea. Thus, Mrs. Godfrey entered into the experience of Mary Baker Glover. At the dinner table, Mrs. Glover boarded with her tenants, Mary asked Mrs. Godfrey about her heavily bandaged swollen finger, and was told that she had run a needle deep into it, and that it was very badly infected. Mrs. Godfrey also said that she had been to several doctors, all of whom wanted to amputate the finger, but she would not allow even though they warned that it would cost her the loss of her entire arm. The following morning, Mrs. Godfrey ran excitedly into the next room in her nightgown, exclaiming, "William, look at my hand!" William was not surprised that her finger was nearly normal, and remarked that it was probably Mrs. Glover's work. But his aunt was overjoyed, and from that moment turned unreservedly to Mrs. Glover as her physician. Mary offered to teach Mrs. Godfrey, but the latter declined, being perfectly satisfied to rely wholly upon Mrs. Glover for healing. She was, however, most eager to have her dear friend come to study and be healed. So it was that in March of 1876, Asa Gilbert Eddy came to Lynn for healing and was greatly improved at the first visit. He came again to Lynn to be taught. The class of two students was distinguished in that it was the first class held wherein the students were able to study from printed books. Mrs. Glover's class book, The Science of Man, in revised form from the original, had been published on the 14th of February. She soon began considering the inclusion of her class book within the pages of the second edition of Science and Health. But little did she know what intricate snares were being set in her path in that regard by the deep designs and dark plots of her former student and junior partner. Mrs. Eddy Spofford had fallen completely under Kennedy's control. When Mrs. Glover had urged Daniel Spofford, or Harry as she called him, to seek a reconciliation, she learned from him that Mrs. Spofford's only terms were a complete vindication of Richard Kennedy. But despite his marital difficulties, Daniel Spofford was very sincere and successful in his work. By the time Mr. Eddy came to study, Dr. Spofford was maintaining offices in Lynn, Haverhill, Newburyport, and Boston, and was the most successful student in selling Science and Health. To Gilbert Eddy, Christian Science was a revelation from God, and its author an angel on earth. He had found the Christ and was ready to follow whithersoever it might lead without so much as a backward glance. He left Boston for Lynn and listed himself in the city directory as A. G. Eddy, Christian Scientist, the first individual in the world to so proclaim publicly. From that moment, he devoted all his time and energy to the practice of Christian Science and never wavered in his fidelity. Dr. Eddy, as he soon became known, was small of stature and, as had been his dauntless mother, always handsomely dressed. His strength of character and unimpeachable integrity were not readily recognized, but they lay behind his gentle manner and pleasant smile, and ere long would offer strength and support to his teacher.